Arket is to create a modern day market, a place where you will find essential products for the ladies, the men's, the kids, the home, but also adding on a cafe.
Although known the world over as a fast fashion giant, the Stockholm-based H&M Group has launched a new label that's pushing the envelope. Far from just keeping your wardrobe covered, Arquette, as the new brand is known, stocks goodies for the home, bathroom and even the airport. But does its first location inside a former department store on London's Regent Street perhaps hint at the brand's broader ambitions? That's ahead today on Section D. This is Section D, Monocle's weekly design show, and I'm your host, Josh Fennett. Also today...
When you pick these really premium brands, when consumers go to the shop the first time, if they see R.M. Williams, they think, OK, well, Arquette's clothes are kind of the clothes version of R.M. Williams' boots.
We'll look at how brands are stepping out of their comfort zone and redesigning the retail experience in an ailing marketplace. And...
Hey, I was waiting for this space for 5 minutes. I've been standing here for 5 minutes waiting.
You got a problem with me parking here, buddy?
As cities open up and embrace two-wheelers and pedestrians, I'll editorialise a little bit about the importance of a good old-fashioned car park. All that coming up right here on Section D on Monocle 24. Now, the world's second largest fashion company has unveiled an ambitious new venture right here in London. Arquette is the latest brand from the H&M Group, offering men's and women's wear, plus homewares, travel accessories and much else besides. In a moment, we'll look at how more and more brick-and-mortar brands are diversifying their offering and how it's changing the retail landscape. But first, this show's gallant and always well-dressed producer, Ben Rylan, takes us inside Arquette's new flagship store, a clothes hanger's toss from our studios right here in London.
How do you create a modern-day marketplace fit for the ferocious yet fashionable crowds of London's premier shopping district? Well, the folk behind H&M think they've got the answer. Arquette is the latest brand to join the ranks of COS and Weekday, but this time the scope is bigger and the ambition higher. As the busy staff were putting the finishing touches on the store's first London flagship, just hours before the grand opening, I met the man overseeing Arquette, Lars Axelsson.
Arquette is to create a modern-day market, a place where you will find essential products for the ladies, the men's, the kids, the home, but also adding on a cafe. We also talk about the second thing, that you should come here to find your everyday uniform, meaning clothes that you wear a lot and usually for a long time. The third thing that we're trying to, with the team, consider as a mission is to, what we say, democratize quality, meaning give access for a broad target group or a broad public to very nice product that we feel should last for a long time and be appreciated for a long time. So now you're standing here in the store. One of the key fundament in the modern day market is obviously to create the place you want to stay in. And this is a little bit, as you can see here, you have a quite good space where we're standing in the entrance of the floor. And this is a little bit what we're saying that we want to do. Create a place where you want to ease, where you want to stay and rather want to stay quite long. How do you do that? That's quite complex. You look back to the customer, our target group, that what we feel have quite little time. So when they have little time, they want to find things quick. If they have time, they would like to spend. So you should cater for both different kind of needs.
Entering Arquette's corner entrance on London's Regent Street, it's impossible not to notice the perfect colour coordination of the store's range of clothing. On the ground floor, menswear is set out with blues to the left, gradually transitioning to greens on the right. It's one part art installation, two parts thoughtful retail design. Lars then continues our tour as we make our way over to an enticing display of homewares.
So what we have done then, and what I think is also a very important thing when it comes to these kind of things, both in clothing, is to help the customer to understand what we are doing. So what we have done is to build a Bath & Body family based on the Century. So if you take this oak moss, that is our hand wash, comes from the Woods family, but then you have some others. So this will guide the customer quite clearly to see, is it from the vanilla tree or is it from the fruit tree? But this one then have the woods as a background. And this will help you quite easily to find in your favorites. And this is, if you look at anyone, helping you all the way. And this grid you will also see on our products, if it's a cashmere, if it's a merino, what kind of material is, again, to help the customer pick the right things, what they like, which we feel is very exciting.
Just beyond the wall of body products is an assortment of travel bags, all of which fold and shrink quite cleverly into an easy-to-carry little parcel.
It's the travel assortment, what we call it. It's a nylon cordura program based on to be very simple when you travel. So this, what we call the 72-hour duffel bag, you need to travel for 2 or 3 days. You have a little bit need of taking quite a lot with you. Then you have this one. This is actually this one, folded out.
It actually retails inside a bag that looks slightly larger than a sleeping bag, and yes, then it folds out to this rather large bag.
And this, what I think is amazing, is a three-way system where you can wear it like this. You can take out, so you can wear it on you. But also, you can open it up and get the backpack out of it.
Being housed in a former department store gives Arket's retail space plenty of room to breathe. A short climb up a set of stairs takes us to the second floor, where the precise eye for colours continues into the brand's women's wear and children's wear.
So we also have the ladies' department up here, which is also very coordinated in colour families. We also have the same everyday uniform thing here, products that you wear a lot and hopefully for a very long time. Coordinated anything from green to the pink red. You have also the suiting part that we're trying to evolve to be even more what we think updated and nice. And then you have a new what we call exhibition connecting to the white color scheme, which we feel is very exciting. So also here, it's very, very blocked out way in obviously colors and also product in the sense here. We have anything from newborn up to 10 years old or 140. You have a baby area, newborn here. You have a girls area. You have a boys area, which we feel is very exciting and very connecting to themes into colors. You even have toys. So we hope this will be not only for the parents, but also for the kids, a very nice area to hang around with.
Arket's London store has all the hallmarks of a flagship, but of course it's only the first stop on the brand's grand European tour, with locations in Brussels, Copenhagen and Munich all coming soon. But one simply shouldn't take in Arket's full range without stopping for an energy booster. Thankfully, they've got an answer for that one too.
And then obviously what to mention is obviously our cafe here. Here in the Regent Street store, it's located, what we feel, in the second entrance, but still in the front of the store, which we feel is very exciting. This is a smaller version of the average cafe that we will have in our store, but we think this suits this kind of location really well. A little bit the coffee on the go, which we feel, and we are very happy to add it in this cafe, and we think it makes much sense. And the menu here is very connecting to Recharge. You recharge with a coffee, a juice, a sandwich or a salad. And it's very nice.
With a brand stretching across men, women, children, homewares and, yes, food, Arket may be the H&M Group's most ambitious undertaking yet. But with its no-nonsense focus on elegant essentials and even its own original typeface, it may just help push Europe's high streets into the next generation of retail. For Monocle, I'm Ben Rylan.
Thank you, Ben. Arket is now open here in London with online orders available across 18 European countries. But for best results, do visit the shop. Arket, of course, isn't the only brand to establish its focus beyond apparel. H&M, Zara and Muji are just some of the high street staples emerging in the so-called lifestyle space. So what does it tell us about evolving retail experiences? Well, here to join me is Monocle's fashion editor. It's Jamie Waters. And Jamie, I like to take note of what you're wearing so I can take it with me on my own fashion journey. Got a pair of swinging blue jeans, a nice kind of, are we calling that baggy striped shirt?
Yes, I'm very much obsessed with everything oversized at the moment. So this is an XL, which was the only thing I was looking at in the folk shop when I was there. And the jeans are also too big for me, which is perfect.
Well, sartorial advice aside, you've done a great piece of reporting for issue one of the Monocle Summer Weekly, our weekly August newspaper. You got a bit of an exclusive interview for us. And Ben Ryland has now been to visit the shop, which has since opened. We're, of course, talking about Arket, the Swedish fashion brand from the H&M group. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what your meeting with Lars Axelsson taught us about what Arket opening here on Regent Street in London actually means for the H&M brand. What are they thinking? Why are they doing it?
Yes, the H&M group is really interesting. So second biggest fashion company in the world, and they've this big umbrella brand that has all these different brands within it. H&M is their most famous, and then they've got more expensive ones like COS, and they've got And Other Stories. And basically, the way it works, as Lars told me, was they've got this group within H&M that is responsible for deciding what is the next label that they're going to launch. So it's this very kind of precise, methodical sort of process of working out who's the next target audience, where's like the next opportunity. Anyway, so a couple of years ago, they sat down and they decided that there was this customer who was sort of over 30 years old, a traveler, sort of like the modern person. Over 30, traveler, healthy, into nice things, but not too fashion forward. And it's sort of this very accessible person, and there's a lot of them. So they obviously are targeting like a big chunk of the market. So that's sort of one half, is that kind of the target customer. And then within that, I guess they've split it into the types of clothes that person wants and also the retail experience that person is looking for.
So that retail experience is the thing that I think really chimes. So when we talk about physical shops, it's quite often at Monocle, we're trying to find the interesting stories where brands are succeeding. But the high street isn't a particularly welcoming place. So I want to ask you next, Jamie, why do you think Arket has taken this big physical retail space and what they were thinking about the type of person that they have? So they're not driving towards online traffic, which obviously has much lower margins. It costs a lot less. And actually the range of products as well. It's not just, you know, your basics. It's not your H&M. There are lots of homeware. There are travel accessories. You know, what's the significance for this new brand from what you learned from your visit to Stockholm and talking to the team behind it? What are they trying to do with physical retail? And is this a good sign for those of us that want to keep our high streets lively?
Yeah, I think what they've kind of done is they've said, right, department stores aren't doing well. Sort of independent boutiques and also strictly monobrand stores, such as H&M's own stores, aren't doing well. So they've kind of gone for somewhere in the middle. So it's almost like a mini department store. By that, I mean, they've got clothes, they've got homeware. They've also got a cafe. And really interesting, they've also got items from other brands. So, I mean, they've been clever. They've picked premium brands such as R.M. Williams boots, Tricker's shoes. They've got Veja sneakers. They tend to be in footwear and homeware because that's where they don't have as much expertise. But what's clever is when you pick these really premium brands, you're then straight away, when consumers go to the shop for the first time, if they see R.M. Williams, they think, okay, well, Arket's clothes are kind of the clothes version of R.M. Williams boots. So you're immediately putting this kind of image or this gauge of where the brand is. And I think that's really clever. Also, what it means is by hitting this middle point, like a mini department store, they're trying to give you as much as possible out of your shopping experience. So you can get everything in one go, which I guess is all about convenience. And what they've said is, you know, you have to get people off the couch. You have to give them a reason to go into the shop. So I think that means you need to have an interesting kind of experience. But then you've also got this thing where you don't want to overwhelm consumers. And we've also seen that a lot of kind of concept stores are not doing so well either. So I think they've kind of straddled this line between you have to be convenient, but also an experience, but not so much of an experience that you're overwhelming. There's so many obstacles to kind of navigate. And I think they have done that quite well. Also on this point of navigation, I went to the shop yesterday. It's interesting because it's very structured and it's sort of almost modular the way it's been put together. And the creative director, when she designed it, she actually looked to very sexy inspiration. She looked to storage systems and museum archives and the way that these kind of institutions that have so many different products to deal with, the way they kind of process them and kind of package them in a really navigable way. And that was what inspired her. And you can see that in the store. It's very easy to process. So although there are quite a lot of clothes and items, it's obvious where each thing is. They're in very strict kind of sections. And it's just the whole point is to make it really easy to kind of get around and get to what you want.
And I think one of the interesting things, one of the lures of department stores always, and, you know, I still get it when I go into them, is that, you know, shopping online obviously gives you great convenience. You can compare prices. You can have it delivered to your slovenly couch if that's where you're sitting and buying it from. But actually, there's this lovely idea of kind of serendipity. You're walking through, you're trusting the retailer to have stocked lots of different items that you also might like that wouldn't pop up on a feed saying, do you like this? They're actually the result of hard work and of, to use an overused word, curation. It sounds like you're pretty impressed by Arquette, and it sounds like they're doing something new in bricks and mortar, which we're always keen on. But the department store model as a whole, we were talking just before the interview, you feel like it's kind of going, it could go one of two ways. Like, is it, you know, we see in Berlin, Cardeve doing, you know, very well after a recent refurbishment. You know, in Monocle magazine, we've written about the Editor's Mall in Buenos Aires, where they're showcasing smaller brands. Does the whole model need a bit of a shake-up? Is Arquette and the way it's doing things something people could learn from, do you think?
I think the department store as a model is kind of in trouble. I think that's what we're seeing generally. There are specific examples that are doing okay, but I think if you look to the US in particular, they're really struggling and it's not a good sign. And they're, for some of the big companies, they've had an uptick in the last quarter, I think. But I think as a rule, the whole experience is just too much effort, which I completely understand. I mean, I think part of the joy of shopping is to be, I agree, there's that idea of kind of serendipity. And when you go into a shop, you want to be surprised. And you also want, I think, you want someone to have chosen things for you and kind of stuff that can surprise you, but that you like. The whole department store model is based on this idea of, rather than picking things that you like, we're going to show you everything that there is. So you must find something that you like in there. But it's very much up to you. You have to work to find what you like among all the offerings. What Lars Axelsson said was that we need to give consumers a choice, but we can't give them too much choice because then that is hard work. And I think what they really need is convenience. There are shops that do well. I mean, there's another one in Sweden, Nitty Gritty, I think is a good example of, it's an independent shop, but it is quite big. They've got a separate men's and women's store. I mean, the men's one is quite a sprawling space and they've got quite a lot of brands, but you know that if you go there, they've got sort of a rack from Barena, they've got a rack from Camo, that, you know, they've got the brands that you like, but there's a lot of options, but it's sort of curated enough that you don't, it's not an effort. It's kind of, there's that bit of joy that comes with, okay, I can make a bit of a discovery. There's a few things, a few options, but I don't have to kind of trawl through hundreds of things.
And Jamie, as I move this massive newspaper, as I fold over the page, I can see a little bit of the selection of products from Arquette, because I suppose our listeners, if they're interested, would like to know where this style sits in the kind of H&M umbrella. And probably, as Monocle's fashion editor, Jamie, they're interested in what you think they should be buying for the season ahead.
The way they've positioned it, it's sort of classics, and it is very much the classic pieces that, so for men's and women's, it's kind of seem like it's, and it's quite a masculine style for the women as well, but it's like Breton stripes. You're going to get like thick navy jumpers, different colored chinos. It's kind of, I would say, perhaps slightly more sophisticated than COS, which is perhaps a bit more fashiony, and sort of And Other Stories, which is just women's, but it's in that kind of world, but I think slightly more sophisticated, a bit more classic. When I was going around yesterday, because I was like thinking what I might buy, I really like the waterproofs. So there's like, I think there was like a khaki coat that was like sort of like a puffer jacket, but it was much thinner. And that I think was my top pick. But it's one of those things that you come up with a full outfit. If you're there and you're like, okay, well, I need trousers, a jumper and a coat and shoes, you're going to get all of those things. You know, it's all kind of very accessible.
Jamie Waters, Monocle's ever dapper fashion editor there. Thank you very much. And now for a little aside. During the 1960s, the city of Detroit was home to the world's tallest department store. Hudson's flagship stood proudly on Woodward Street downtown, and the insatiable growth of the city's automotive industry helped make Hudson's one of the leading department stores of its era, beginning in the former Detroit Opera House and eventually expanding to cover an entire city block.
Now, eventually changing demographics brought the Hudson's brand to an end, but its vision of an all-encompassing retail experience still resonates. And its heyday is something that many shop builders today would love more than anything to ape. This is Section D. Do stay tuned. Next up in the show, I'm taking a moment to mull over the declining importance of the humble car park in our cities and how speeding towards a purely cycle or pedestrian first future may yet stall the health of the places we call home. A car horn sounds short and sharp, and a pedestrian steps back to the safety of a raised pavement as a silver Toyota pulls up to a yellow entry barrier outside Welbeck Street car park. It's startling because London isn't really a city of honkers. Increasingly, it's not a city of car parks either. And this site is slated to be demolished to make way for a shiny new hotel by Eric Parry Architects. The building in question sits between the preened streets of London's Marylebone and the rumbling retail heartland of Oxford Street. Metaphorically, however, Welbeck Street car park is at a crossroads between breakneck city centre development and conservation. It straddles a wider debate about how we'd navigate our busy cities, and it's losing. Built in 1971, the vast seven-storey block was erected by Michael Blampied and partners at the back end of the brutalist building boom. Welbeck Street car park is striking, if not necessarily beautiful. Concrete crenulations zigzag against the pale blue sky, and upturned chevrons cascade down its exterior like zany chainmail. It's not ornamental, but it is extremely statuesque for a car park. There are soot stains and drip marks from rain and runoff that have tattooed its concrete skin and an air of dinge from its cavernous and about quarter-full innards. Today, such structures are seen by cities as relics of a bygone era. They are motifs of a post-war municipal agenda that saw roads as the veins through which our city's mobility lifeblood must pass. By extension, car parks were needful investments. The building was part of a movement when civic pride, power, and innovation came together in the creation of these striking structures. The choice of concrete was an innovation at the time and a mark of positivity, rather than the revisionist ruin porn that much of brutalism is seen as today. Authorities are pondering how to lower pollution, but in reimagining our cities without cars and the rush to develop, are also overlooking the key utility of these structures. What can be learnt from the pride and promise that these car parks were built with? It wouldn't hurt local councils nor cities the world over to take a few lessons from the Welbeck Street project. Cars will be with us for a while, so why not house them in bold and beautiful structures made from the best materials of the day? Londoners, already hit by congestion charges, need places to store their vehicles and will need more car parks for years to come. Compromise, to me, is a two-way street. Before we depart today, a few stories that have caught our attention. There'll be one more way to enjoy everyone's favourite toy bricks from next month when the long-anticipated Lego House finally opens. The new experience centre is designed by architect Bjarke Ingels and is located in Billund, Denmark, the birthplace of the plastic brick, though needless to say, it's not built from them. The company will also launch a toy version of the Lego House as part of its architecture line. Turner Prize-winning artist Anthony Gormley has unveiled a life-size sculpture installation from his latest series, Another Time, on the coastline of Margate, right here in the UK. Gormley's best-known number is the Imperious Angel of the North, but the new series includes 100 life-size iron figures which will be presented across the UK and further afield. The latest rests in front of the Turner Contemporary, where it will remain as part of the summer exhibition at the gallery until the 5th of November. And finally, in farcical fashion news, Raf Simmons, Chief Creative Officer of Calvin Klein, has launched a duct tape to be sold at $250 a reel. It comes hot on the heels of an exorbitantly expensive IKEA-style bag from Balenciaga and a pitilessly expensive paperclip sold by Prada. Whether or not the release of the tape is tongue-in-cheek, we're fairly sure the style won't stick. Section D was produced by Ben Ryland and edited by that ever-patient soul, Alex Funnell. I'm Josh Fennett, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
If a custom-tailored vet asks me out for something wet, when the vet begins to pet, I cry hooray. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. been asked to have a meal by a big tycoon in steel. If the meal includes a deal, accept I may. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. There's an oil man known as Tex, who is keen to give me checks. And his checks, I fear, means that Tex is here to stay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. From Ohio, Mr. Thorne calls me up from night till morn. Mr. Thorne wants cornered corn, and that ain't hay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. From Milwaukee, Mr. Fritz often dines me at the Ritz. Mr. Fritz invented Schlitz, and Schlitz must pay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. Mr. Harris Plutocrat wants to give my cheek a pat. If the Harris pat means a Paris hat, baby,